Hello, ODAC fans, and welcome to episode 13 of the ODAC podcast. My name is JJ Nekloff. I'm the associate commissioner with the Old Dominion Athletic Conference. And as always, I have with me the commish, Brad Bankston. Brad, how are you doing today?
Doing great, JJ. Looking forward to some exciting spring championship events here over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, we've got kind of a sprint marathon, if you will. I'm going to coin a new event for us. It's the 800-meter sprint, not a run, because it's a little longer than the 400-meter dash. Yeah, 400-meter dash, anything like that. But starting this weekend here, we're recording this on Friday, April 11th here, at least this piece of it. And we've got two interviews for you here today, but we're the day before the first ever ODAC Men's Volleyball Championship match. We have that coming up at Randolph-Macon College this weekend, where we've got Roanoke heading to Ashland to square off against the Yellow Jackets for that first piece of ODAC hardware. Brad, I think you were able to take in one of the semifinals during the midweek, right?
Yeah, I was. I was at the Roanoke Eastern Mennonite game. Of course, both of the semifinals went to 3-0 kind of decisions. Surprising, I think, maybe for the Roanoke EMU game, because those three teams were all tied for second place. We had to break that through, I think it was set differential for our tiebreaker. So, you know, I was a little surprised that it went as well for Roanoke as it did. I thought that match might go 4 or 5, but Roanoke played an exceptional match and of course, left there a 3-0 winner and gets to travel to Randolph-Macon, who's undefeated in the regular season in the ODAC. And we'll see what Saturday afternoon brings for the Maroons and the Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, no doubt. I think I would agree with you. I'm surprised that both went 3-0. I thought both of them would at least go 4, and I agree with you. A 5-setter would not have been out of the realm for either one, but more likely for the 2-3 matchup with Roanoke and EMU. And just knowing what I know with the talent that Virginia Wesleyan's got, I thought, you know, that was the opportunity for a non-3-0 decision there to see what we came about. But either way, we're going to have a great championship match. Two good teams ready to go up and square off in Ashland at 2 o'clock on Saturday. So if you can make your way to Ashland and want to take in the first ODAC Men's Volleyball Championship, that would be great to do inside of Crenshaw Gymnasium. If not, you can still catch it streaming on the web, as Randolph-Macon will be streaming the content from the match there. So we'll be all set with that. Lots of things happening on the interwebs and social media platforms and whatnot over the past week. As Brad, we're in the middle of D3 week, and you talk a little bit about, give everybody a 30-second primer. What is Division III week, D3 week?
Yeah, you know, I think D3 week is just an opportunity for the National Association, obviously the NCAA and its governance structure in Division III, and all the members that are so proud to be members of Division III, a chance to tout its benefits and value. And it started a number of years ago, really as an initiative, probably from the National SAC, and a marketing opportunity for that portion of the association to tell its story. And every year there are themes that come out from the national office, and they encourage institutions to find ways to highlight their athletes and their offerings at the Division III level in 1 week. Not that they don't do that all the time, as you and I both know. We do it all the time in our office. Our institutions do as well. But it is one opportunity at one time during the academic year for Division III to be the highlight. And it's always it's pretty cool to see the type of ingenuity and creativity that we have at within our membership of how they choose to highlight it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how each school chooses to do it. Some are a little bit different than the others. I mean, Student Athlete Advisory Committee, that's what SAC stands for. And there's a lot of programming that's derived from their efforts, as well as athletic communications departments in general with the total athletic department feel. But then also individual teams put out stuff over their social media feeds and whatnot and tack on to the national themes put forth by the Division III SAC group. And that's one of the places that we focused on, or the place that we focused on here for this show of the ODAC podcast, is mental health awareness. This has long been one that the ODAC is focused on. I remember back to the days when Maddie Burns was at Randolph-Macon College, and she was the chair of National SAC. And really, she was a part of that group that started the Stop the Stigma, or End the Stigma, on mental health awareness and mental health in general. from a national perspective. So really to continue this on for us here locally is nice. And we were able to talk to two individuals, one of them a student athlete, one of them a professional in the counselor realm. And those being Amanda Lawhorn, who is a junior softball player, who is a junior softball player at Randolph College, and then Tara Nunley, who's a program manager for Campus Suicide Prevention Center of Virginia. So really good to talk to the two of them about the different sides, if you will, of mental health awareness. And we recorded these interviews earlier here this week. So let's go ahead and talk to Amanda Lawhorn first here on this edition of the ODAC podcast. We're joined by Amanda Lawhorn, a junior softball player at Randolph College. Amanda, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. We're continuing our D3 week programming with the ODAC podcast, as Amanda is one of two interviews that we're doing this week, and specifically focusing on mental health awareness. And I think, you know, Amanda, for you, let's kind of start in a general capacity here. What's your experience with mental health awareness and kind of bringing that to the forefront at Randolph College, or maybe other stops that you've had along your academic journey so far?
So I've always had a very prominent mental health journey. So after 12th grade, senior year in high school, I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And then that's when my passion for mental health advocacy really started, because I wanted to help people like me, in a sense, and then help them find that hope and then find that comfortableness of not being alone, especially in athletics, because that can take so much of a toll on us as a group. And then, so freshman year of college, I went to Averitt University, and then that was just a rough year for me mentally. And then I found out that that wasn't the place for me. So I was pretty lost then. I didn't really have resources at the time. And then I ended up transferring sophomore year to Randolph College, and coming in, it seemed home. And then I was comfortable coming here. And one of the biggest goals that I had coming here was to make mental health more prominent on campus because of my struggles personally, athletically, and at Averitt. And then I ended up getting started with the Hidden Opponent, which is a nonprofit organization for mental health. And then that kind of simmered over, and then I ended up doing a collaboration with them and SAC, and we did a mental health campaign. Actually, fast forward to this past September, we did a mental health campaign for Suicide Awareness Month, and we did two big posters in our athletic complex stating, what is your why, and what's one thing you're struggling with right now? And that actually had a really good turnout compared to what I thought it was, because our biggest goal, so I'm vice president, but when I was talking to our president of SAC, our biggest goal was to get more men involved with it because of the stigma around men's mental health. And that actually had a really good turnout with even men's coaches. So that was really impressive. And then as far as my personal advocacy on campus, the Hidden Opponent I had to drop just because of how much I was involved on campus, as y'all have seen. But I'm still actively suggesting mental health advocacy ideas through SAC, because that's a really big thing for us on campus. There have been increased interests in our sports. We just got a sports psychologist on campus, so there's been an increased interest in that, an increased interest in mental health events in general for us. Even with our programming board, we've looked at partnering with our philanthropy council, we've looked at partnering with. So any connections we can pretty much get through campus, which luckily I'm involved in almost every club, so I have those connections. But we just want to make mental health not as stigmatized. And that's our biggest goal, because nobody all over, like all across the board, no matter what level you're playing at, athletics can be such a toll on you mentally, especially if you have the coaching that is taking the toll on you, toxic players, really anything. And then where the big part of my mental health journey came in is last year when I transferred in, I was in pain in my legs. It wasn't normal pain from just athletics. And then turns out it, instead of 4 years of shin splints, it ended up turning out to be compartment syndrome.
Oh my.
If y'all know what that is. Yeah. So it ended up turning out to be compartment syndrome. So when I first went to my athletic trainer about it, it took from then to February. So 5 months to get an answer of what it actually was, because it's so rare, especially in softball. It's usually just in primarily running sports like soccer and track. So that took a huge toll on my mental health because I was in and out of practice, in and out of games. I couldn't practice consistently. I could never get a consistent bat. I couldn't play the field at all. So that really took a toll on my mental health last year. And then I ended up having the surgery. And then fast forward to this fall, I also couldn't play this fall because I was still recovering. Physical therapy, I was in for a total of 8 months for my legs. And then come January, I finally got released. And then even now, it's kind of, the pain is still there and doesn't fully go away. It's not completely healed, but it's definitely manageable now. But even now, it's still like, I was injured, I can't get this consistency back. It's just like this whole talk with myself in my head. It's just like, I'm not the player I was before. It looks like I've never touched a ball before. Like, it's like I've never played before. I know I keep telling my parents that whenever I mess up in a game, but it's like all these thoughts going through my head because of my injury, but I'm not personally like able to give myself that grace because I was injured. So I'm holding that over my head. And so my biggest thing right now is being an advocate for those who have went through injuries, which is kind of easy on our team because sadly we've had probably the most amount of injuries in one season, I would say even in the ODAC. So it's been a rough journey, but even now, like, it just feels like, in a sense, like I'm being held back and then like others with injuries are being held back. So it's like making that community within ourselves, even like if we feel like we don't have other support, we have each other, and that way we're not turning on each other. So,
Amanda, I think first of all, I'm sorry that you've gone through that. It sounds like you're hopefully on the right end of this from a mending perspective. Talk a little bit about the response that you got on campus with the program that you did around Suicide Prevention Week. You know, what did you learn? Certainly not anything about any one individual, but what did you learn? Learned that there were other people just like yourself that were struggling with things?
Oh, yeah. So that was completely my initiative. I took full responsibility and full lead for that, which was a really big thing for me. Like, I wanted to take that jump with mental health in the fall. So that was a really special project for me personally. And so a lot of people ended up writing on both. It was completely anonymous, so we don't know exactly who wrote what. But a lot of it I had heard from male athletes responding to it, actually thanking us for making that anonymous ability to see that others are struggling just like them. And like I said, that was our main goal, was to destigmatize men's mental health, especially because as the stigma goes, it's easier for women to open up just because they're more emotional. And then for men, it's just like, oh, I gotta put this tough front on. Like, men don't cry, men don't have emotions. And so it was really just for, it's really aimed towards everybody, but the big goal with it was for to open up that stage and that platform for the male athletes to speak out. And it actually turned out really good, because even I know a couple of our male athletes spoke to me after our little campaign finished, and they felt less like judged and less like they were getting looked at for opening up about their mental health. And even coaches had responded on it, which we didn't even plan for in the beginning. But even coaches came and wrote like stuff they were struggling with personally. And like, that, I mean, that's awesome because we didn't even plan for the coaches to be a part of it or even to respond to it. And even the male coaches even wrote on it. And it was just honestly astounding because I didn't expect to get that much of a turnout just because we go to a smaller school, but it took me by surprise and it got really good turnout. So I look forward to doing that again next year.
When you're reflecting back on your journey, obviously from Averett to Randolph and then the complexity of having the injury, all those things, who stood out to you as a beacon of light, as a helpful person? You know, I know that everybody finds that person and it certainly just provides you the opportunity to say thanks to them.
So my big beacon of hope was my parents, because I was ready to quit freshman year. And I was ready to hand in the cleats, hand in the towel. I was mentally lost. I was the most lost I had ever been with anything before. And my parents knew that deep down inside of me that I was not ready to give it up yet, because I've been playing since I was 4. So that's a long time to be playing a sport. And they saw it in me. They still saw the passion in me. They know my personality. They know I have that drive. So they really pushed me to find a different resource for softball. And they ended up convincing me to enter the transfer portal. And then I got away from that and then came here to Randolph. And so then I was kind of lost because I came to a new school and then didn't really know anybody at the time. And then me and one of my teammates just ended up clicking the first semester that I was here. And then turns out, fast forward to our spring season last year, she also gets injured. She also had a major injury that she had to get surgery on. And then we ended up becoming best friends. She really kept me going over the summer, especially with how much rehab I had to do. And so we were that beacon of hope for each other, just because we are going through surgery together. We got injured in the same season. We're going through all the rehab processes together. We're keeping each other up to date. And so even coming back this year, it's been hard for the both of us, really, really hard. And so keeping that connection, especially for me, I'm not one that is good with connections per se. Like, I'm not much of a verbal person. I'm not much of a, it's weird to say that I'm such a mental health advocate, but like, it's hard for me to talk about my feelings. But I feel like that's where the advocacy starts at, is recognizing that and wanting to do something about it. But it's been easier for me to open up to my best friend on the team. And then that's where it's really driven me for my passion, because she knows how passionate I am about mental health and everything I've gone through. And so she's really been my drive to push through injury and even be an advocate for mental health on campus. Yeah. So that's where it came from.
You know, Amanda, as we look at things here and we start to wrap up our conversation here, I want to let you know it resonates first personally with me a little bit, and my story going back to what caused me to stop playing soccer many, many, many moons ago, as you evidenced by the gray hair and in my beard, with an injury and same kind of considerations and whatnot. But as you look at the culture and the environment that you've start to build there on campus, with some good, with a good tale of experience, with people in the know now, with having good response so far, what's the next step? What's the desired next avenue for you to continue to grow this, and to continue to grow that type of environment there at Randolph College, and possibly be an example for things moving down the road at other places?
So, I will still be involved in SAC next year. So, if I get the position I want or even if I still have the same position, either way, I'm going to be involved. I want to do a lot more mental health events, because I know we have a Wildcat Wellness Council, which is our mental health club on campus. I want to look at doing more stuff with them. And I know, like, athletics is so busy. There's not any denial about that, especially since schedules can change so much. But I'm really driving towards that next year. And then other than that, I hope to keep this ODAC subcommittee thing that we have going on. I really enjoy that. And I like contacting Stacy and talking with her. So I'm hoping that continues. And I think that will give me a good avenue and even resources and even confidence to even speak up about stuff. Because in the fall, in our overall ODAC meeting, it was kind of crazy because I was so comfortable, like looking back, I was so comfortable opening up about my mental health. But if you would have looked at me freshman year, I was this shy little kid on campus and nobody knew me. Nobody knew what I was going through. I didn't want to talk about anything. And then now I talk to everybody. I offer myself. I can read emotions very well too. I know how to read people's faces, people's expressions, emotions, and be able to open up to them and be that resource and offer them that resource, and then provide them with information, because I've even came acquainted with the staff in the counseling center, making those resources. Even like a lot of what people don't realize about athletics and mental health is the little things matter. And then that's my big message leaving this, is like the little things matter. Speaking up matters. Being that voice for other people matters, even if you don't see it personally. I've had people come to me, and then I've had conversations about mental health and resources provided to them. But then they go and tell their friends how much of a beacon I was. And then I get that feedback. So it's just, it's funny and like calming and just honestly surprising. And it like makes me happy just to know like that gets around and that I can be that resource for people. So yeah, that's a lot, but I'm looking forward to everything in the future. So.
Well, Amanda, we congratulate you on your positive personal growth here so far through your own journey, your own story, and look forward to seeing what you're able to continue to build there, both at Randolph and hopefully within the subcommittee that you mentioned with the ODAC. We thank you for joining us and having this conversation with us as part of our D3 week programming.
Well, JJ, it was certainly great to have Amanda join us and hear her journey and how important community and teamwork and just communication is to dealing with mental health challenges. Obviously, I think a lot of times that is a stigma that there's a stigma associated with the idea of asking for help. And I certainly commend Amanda for the work that she's doing and the SAC at Randolph and other organizations throughout the ODAC and across the country that are doing to try to encourage those that feel like they want to have someone to talk to reach out and ask for help.
Yeah, no, it's I like getting a student athlete perspective on this side of things, because, you know, we think of just with the example that she gave, you get an injury, you go through the rehab, you come back, and that's all that we're dealing with. But a lot of other things going on, especially for really a group of humans, a group of individuals that are in their latter developmental years, there, 18 to 22 years old, kind of coming through and dealing with a lot of teams, some of them being away from home for the first time ever in their lives, some still being the first ones of their families to go to college, that sort of thing. So lots of different pressures to go through. And I think that's where you and I, we kind of cheated a little bit, if you will, because we actually talked to Tara first. So we had some of these ideas, which I think was good for us, in our head to talk with Amanda about, that we previously discussed with Tara. And again, she is the program manager for the Campus Suicide Prevention Center of Virginia. So while that's the title of the organization and whatnot, she has experience in a whole lot of other areas. She's a licensed professional counselor in the state of Virginia, so really was able to talk to us about a couple different sets of areas here that include, obviously, yes, the suicide prevention piece to it, but general mental health awareness. So let's go ahead and listen into our conversation with Tara Nunley earlier this week. We're joined by Tara Nunley. She's the program manager and a licensed professional counselor in Virginia, and she works for the Campus Suicide Prevention Center of Virginia. Tara, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. We continue our D3 week programming here, focusing on mental health awareness. And Tara, this is why we call you in here, is you're the professional here on this type of topic. And we'll kind of start off with maybe a broader base one. You know, can you share some of the most common mental challenges that you see, or mental health challenges you see with Division III student athletes, specifically, obviously, with the ODAC, given your location here and your experience with ODAC schools?
Sure. Yeah, we obviously see a lot of performance anxiety. So the anxiety that comes with the sport itself and being able to perform at an elite level with the sport itself. And then we also have a lot of kind of identity issues. If a student athlete becomes injured, or they're a senior and they're getting ready to finish their sport, or they're struggling with whether or not they want to continue within their sport, and who are they if they aren't that athlete within that environment. And then we have a lot of kind of depression, just generalized anxiety, kind of the same that you would see with kind of the mainstream students, but you have it kind of at a higher level because they have so many added pressures that our mainstream students, our non-student athletes might have.
Tara, you know, first of all, thanks for taking time to spend some time with us to talk about this super important subject. And recently at our SAC meeting, when we asked the question of what additional programming do our student athletes want, you know, mental health either is the catchphrase of the day, right? Or it's something that everybody's using, and there's a need for it. There's a desired need for it. So we appreciate the work that you do as well. You know, at the Division III level, obviously people are stressed. They're stressed on resources. They're stressed on staff. And the athletes are the same way. They're trying to juggle academics, sports, et cetera, without the scholarships or the resources at Division I. You know, how does that unique pressure impact their mental health? I mean, how could they be different than a Division I athlete?
So with the Division I athletes, a lot of them, not all of them, but many of them have at least a partial scholarship that's helping to offset what their parents or they themselves will have to pay. And so the added pressure of just either my parents are paying a lot of money for me to be here. Is this really something that I really want to do? Trying to figure out how to supplement the income. So they might have part-time jobs. Some of them may even have full-time jobs, depending on what, you know, what their circumstances are. And on top of that, you have your already important academics. And depending on what their majors are, you know, some are more time consuming than others. And so they have all of these stresses. And then on top of that, they're expected to get better and better and to be studying not only their academics, but to be studying the plays and the information that their coaches give them. And it's almost impossible to be really good in all three areas. And so when that happens, when you're not able to perform high at a high level, and you are a competitive person, which is what most of our athletes are, you've created this really toxic kind of environment where something has to give. And ultimately, a lot of times what ends up being sacrificed are things like sleep and our diet, and kind of when we're able to connect with people that we care about. And so really what ends up happening is their mental health takes the brunt of the consequence of that lifestyle.
You know, when we're, some of the things you kind of touched on there are some of the, maybe some tools, some wellness tools, some strategies. You mentioned sleep there, and how about the lack thereof? And I think, you know, as we're looking at it, what are some of those preventative things, or some of the things that you can do to recommend, that you would recommend to D3 student athletes that can kind of help maintain that balance, their resiliency, their ability to adjust to their environments with all those things that we're talking about that you mentioned that they have to do, not only get better on the athletic arena, but also in academics, and expected to, or at least partially expected to, you know, participate in regular campus events and that sort of thing, you know, part of campus life. What are some of those preventative things or things that they can do to help themselves put themselves in their best headspace, if you will?
Right. Well, and what I found is the student athletes who achieve the balance the best are the ones who plan, the ones who learn how to manage their time, and who make sleep a priority. So sleep, and I'm not talking about 10 hours. We don't want more than 10 hours. We don't want less than 6 hours. We want probably about 6 to 8 hours of sleep, and who do that consistently. So if you can find a 6 or 8 hour block of time and you can consistently sleep during that time and not try to power nap your way through the day, we have found that healthy sleep habits are one of the key indicators of a healthy mental health and a physical health as well. So if you are prioritizing nothing else, then prioritize the time that you're able to go to sleep at night. So, and in order to do that, you need to be able to set a certain schedule. And that is incredibly hard because schedules change depending on practice, depending on classes, depending on whatever. But this is where coaches can help with helping their students to develop those schedules, or having people come in and talk to their teams about how to manage their time. Because time management tends to be something that our students struggle with. And because of that, they don't feel that they have time to do everything, when really, if they just learned how to manage their time better, they're able to find that they can fit in mental health, physical health, and then all of the demands that are required of them.
One of the conversations that we've had from an administrative side is do we invest in the Green Bandana Project? Do we lean in on the mental health first aid training for our staff? You know, and Division III is really sinking their teeth into this program called Mental Health First Aid. Mm-hmm. Part of the reluctancy, I think, of people that is really expressing the need to have somebody to talk to. So could you walk through, you know, how you would approach someone or a student athlete who's struggling but hesitant to engage in counseling, and or identify somebody that may need assistance, for all those that are listening to, have a little nugget that they could use, have up their sleeve?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I think that the more education that we can do to help people feel more comfortable just listening to people and just hearing and asking about things like suicide. Hey, sometimes when people are experiencing XYZ, they're thinking about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? Teaching people just to have that basic conversation, or teaching people to be comfortable just listening. Because I think a lot of people think, well, if I send them to a counselor, that person is the professional. They can help solve all the problems. When the magic of counseling is really about 80% just your ability to trust the person you're talking to. Yes, we as counselors teach techniques. Yes, we teach you ways that you can better cope with stress in healthier ways. We can give you kind of some direction, but a lot of what happens in counseling is just a person listening to another person, sometimes reflecting back what they hear and connecting them with further resources that might help them to be in a better place. So yes, it is important that we're able to identify mental health disorders, and a professional will be able to do that. But a lot of what our student athletes are experiencing is just simple stress and anxiety and things that a lot of us have been through. So creating mentorship opportunities. So where you have a senior who is mentors with a freshman to kind of help them connect with resources on campus, creating support groups within your athletic departments that kind of allow students the space just to, for lack of better terms, emotionally vomit with each other. Like, I just say, you know, this is hard and we're in this together. Creating environments like that is every bit as important as doing training such as the Green Bandana or mental health first aid. I do have some concerns with both of those, which I won't share necessarily with the open public, but part of the struggle with mental health first aid is you're teaching just enough about mental health disorders that you're giving an 18 to 22 year old the feeling that they are professional and they can diagnose, when really what we want to do is we want to be teaching people how to just listen and then how to refer people to resources. So yes, those programs are really important, but what's just as important is that we are creating environments on our campuses that give our students connections to each other and give our students connections to resources that we have, helping our student athletes to know that they're not alone. And here is who you can go to if you don't want to go see a professional. Here's a person that you could talk to get some basic information. So trainings are important, and it's just as important to create opportunities for connection and belonging within our home campuses.
Tara, I'm a big believer in culture and philosophy, you know, within teams, within athletic departments. So I think you started really to touch on some of that stuff, getting into the mentorship program and whatnot. But I think overall, we're very reactive to lots of things, not just mental health awareness. People with most aspects in our life, we're reactive to things that once something happens, okay, let's go and fix it. And then it applies elsewhere. How can we get to that before that though? Creating, fostering these cultures, the department mantras, if you will, the philosophies, where maybe some of the key tenets that athletic departments or maybe just teams could look at to really help hit this before it becomes a problem, to bring people in to a culture that they feel comfortable with from the start so that you really minimize the impacts of what could happen if somebody's mental health takes a downward trend.
Yeah. Anytime you are creating a culture or you're developing mantras that center around connection and belonging, that can center around we're in this together, the center around we're a family, and then teach what that means. Because some student athletes, many actually, are coming in with no understanding of what a family is, no understanding of what a healthy community is. And so being able to create an environment where they now can see this is what a healthy community looks like. When someone is hurting, we help them. When someone needs support, we support them. When someone needs to be challenged, we challenge them. And when someone needs to be encouraged, we encourage them. So creating those sorts of mantras, which are more than just we want to win, which we do, but we, you know, the win at all costs type of cultures tend to have more higher rates of suicide and the higher rates of dropout and burnout than the cultures that have a family or a community first kind of feel to them. So if you're creating a culture, your culture really does need to foster community, belonging, and healthy family cultures.
Tara, I really appreciate you taking the time out to visit with us today. You know, it's funny that we end with that comment, because I think that's one of the strengths of this conference is the continuity of its administrators that have been a part of our institutions for many years, and the fact that they genuinely and they could have me snowed, they genuinely care about each other. And it's added so much value to how we do business. And that goes from one game to the next, one season to the next, one year to the next. So it does mean a lot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Of course.
Brad, it's always good to hear from Tara Nunley. We, of course, know her in several different ways. She's the wife of head coach Clay Nunley at Roanoke College and has been associated with the ODAC for quite a while and been a friend to us and many here in the conference. And hearing her perspective, her side on what schools, what athletic departments, what teams can do to help foster that culture, foster that environment that welcomes discussion surrounding mental health awareness, I think is one that needs to permeate throughout the conference and really, really beyond the conference, probably nationally in all aspects like this, as competition has lots of different things that we need to focus on.
Well, JJ, it's so refreshing to hear Tara's perspective and knowing that we have people like her helping our college student athletes. Of course, you know, I'm aware of Tara's work and as you have been over the years, and it's a blessing to have people like her that are working with our students across campuses. And if she's any indication as to the quality of people that are available at our counseling services, it's refreshing to know that everyone has quality care available to them, and the importance of being able to reach out. And I think we heard from Tara's comments, again, how important community actually is to the process. And teamwork provides that, team environment provides that. And I know that our institutions and our athletic departments are working diligently and finding ways to continue to emphasize this and to provide care when needed to their student body.
They're all working toward being the student athletes, and the teams all working toward, you know, goals. Some of them may be different depending on the level of play you're talking about, whether they want to be at a certain spot in the conference, winning a conference, going to the tournament, national tournament, that sort of thing. And it helps to have these resources help them reach that, to deal with the everyday things that we're all going through to go ahead and reach those goals. And we see a lot of that come to fruition here. If I can transition into just a quick look at what we've got coming down the road here over the next couple of weeks, really probably the next month, is once we get through next weekend, we've got a championship going on each of the next several weeks throughout the second week of May, when we're both crowning a softball ODAC champion at a campus site after being in Salem the week before, and then crowning a baseball champion when we're at Capital One Park in a group of four double elimination after having four best of three series the weekend before with that. But we've got, you know, outdoor track and field that follows up after men's volleyball, as well as the two golf championships, the women's golf championship being the first one on the docket here, starting on April 21st on that Monday, and then rolling through Wednesday. And then the same thing for men's golf down at Forest Oaks, women's golf playing at Wintergreen here in the state, Forest Oaks down in Greensboro. And then the lacrosse championships, both of them, and the men's and women's tennis championships, all roughly at the same times here as we get ready to crown a bunch of champions and hand out a bunch of awards and have trophies going on throughout the end of the month and really into that second week in May. So lots of things coming down the docket for us, some of it administratively with managing. I mean, I always dread the time of year, but really it's a good thing because what comes out of it are awards for people. But I'm going to have like 150 awards open at one time here by the last couple of days of April here. So it's going to be an interesting time for that. But Brad, we always look forward to this time of year.
Yeah, it's great. And it, you know, it gets us closer to the end. I know that it's been a long year. It certainly is for our administrators and our institutions, from the administrative help, from athletic trainers to sports information directors, et cetera. So it's nice to see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you know, it's still a pretty good distance away. You know, we've got a lot of really cool things ahead with all of our championships, starting with women's golf. And you know, I think this is what we enjoy. I mean, we enjoy everything about our job, but we really enjoy the opportunity to actually go and watch championships, watch teams win and advance to NCAA play, and have had the chance, as we've talked about throughout the year, to host national championship events. So not only do we get a chance to see our teams advance to the tournament, get to follow them in the tournament, hopefully see them play maybe in a finals environment, but we get to host that as well. And that's really what we're all doing here, right? We're helping our institutions to manage something that's very important to them from an athletics perspective, institutional perspective. At the same time, we get to see some joy and hopefully provide some memorable experiences to our student athletes. So certainly looking forward to embarking on that this weekend with men's volleyball, and then headed into women's golf as our first real traditional spring championship that we've had facing us here at the end of the month.
Yep. Expect us to bring a couple more shows to you here in the next few weeks, some of them probably on site, as I know that Brian Hearn, the women's golf coach at Randolph-Macon College, has listened to all 12 of our previous shows, and he's clamoring to be on here and to chat with us about everything that happens in the women's golf world, specifically with the Yellow Jackets, obviously. But I think that could be a place that we kind of bring you an on-site perspective from things, maybe talk to a couple of coaches, maybe some of the golfers that are there as well. But we'll make sure we kind of vet that out for you all here over the next couple of weeks. For Brad Bankston, my name is JJ Neckloff. We'll talk to you next time on the ODAC Podcast.